Hey everyone, welcome to Buzzing About Romance. I am Becky, and joining me for this episode is Amanda. Hi, Amanda.
Hi, Becky.
And Lindsay. Hi, Lindsay.
Hi.
Tonight's episode is Amanda's episode. I feel like we've been doing this over the course of the last couple months, that each co-host has kind of got to pick a, I need to talk about this. Please, let's talk about this. I'm obsessed with this episode. Lindsay got baseball. And Heather and Jenny, we did the LGBTQIA episode. So we're hitting all the beats here.
Yeah.
And so we've got a action-packed episode. So we're just going to get right to it because I did all the research.
You did. I read the notes. They're amazing.
I was like, because I really don't have any books to contribute to this week's episode.
Well, I mean, I think the definition is the important part here because it's kind of changed, or, you know, it's like a new popular thing that people think is new, but it's not really new.
It's not really new.
You know, so.
So today we are diving into a magical corner of romance genre that's been taking readers by storm, romantasy. These are books where sweeping love stories meet fantastical worlds filled with magic, mythical creatures, and high-stakes adventures. Whether you're drawn to enemies to lovers with a side of sword fights, epic battles paired with forbidden kisses, or lush world-building that sets the stage for all-consuming love, romantasy has something for everyone. I actually think that I just lied to you. I don't think it's for everyone. I don't. Okay. I lied.
But you have read some.
I have read some. Okay. But I think that, and we'll get more in depth into this, but I do think that there's a certain type of reader for romantasy, for fantasy. And it's not about suspending belief, but it's like digging into the details. I think a little bit of romantasy is like the terms of service agreement for everything you ever buy. We're unpacking what makes this genre so irresistible, exploring how it blends the best of romance and fantasy, and even comparing it to high fantasy and other subgenres. Plus, we've got some stellar romantasy book recommendations to add to your TBR. So grab your magical talisman or maybe just your favorite beverage and join us as we talk about this genre where love stories soar beyond the stars and into the realm of imagination. So before we even get started, we need to define what romantasy is. And so, Lindsay, do you want to read my definition?
Yeah. So romantasy is a subgenre of romance that blends romantic relationships with fantastical elements such as magic, mythical creatures, or otherworldly settings. While the romance is central to the story, the fantastical world building and plot often play a significant role, creating a balance between the two genres.
So the basics of romantasy, the romance is going to be more forward than the fantasy. Just like in a romance, the relationship, the romance, the couple is going to be more forward than the story that is developing within their relationship. Yes, we can all agree with this?
Yes, we can agree.
We got the basics down. Okay, history of the romantasy genre. While many lovely people believe that this is a brand new subgenre that came out with Fourth Wing. It is not.
No.
This is not new. And actually, the idea of romantic fantasy has been around since the dawning of fantasy writing.
Yeah. I mean, if it's got a romantic subplot or any kind of romance, it's it falls within this new definition, I guess, or whatever they're calling it.
Because even if we look at Game of Thrones and George R.R. Martin, if you think about what is some of the most dynamic pieces within that series, it is all of the relationships. And while it is not romanticy, because there is never a single focus on one couple, it's lots of couples. And that's where it starts to play a little bit more towards high fantasy. So, early influences of, so we're going to give you a history. I'm going to give you a history of the romanticy romance genre. I'm going to do early, and then Amanda, you will just read every other paragraph. Okay. So early influences. The roots of romanticy can be traced to the works like The Lord of the Rings. While not a romance, its deep relationships inspired later romanticy tropes and the rise of fantasy novels into the mid-20th century. So think about that. Really, the start of romanticy comes with books like The Lord of the Rings, where relationships were the main focus in the movements of those stories.
Okay, so modern romanticy emergence. Romanticy gained distinct recognition in the 1990s with authors like Anne Bishop and continued evolving with popular titles like Sarah J. Maas's A Court of Thorns and Roses series, which pushed it into mainstream awareness.
The popularity bloom, the 2010s and 2020s saw a surge in romanticism fueled by a growing crossover audience between romance and fantasy readers. And I want to bring this up because this is not an author that was ever on my radar, but again, fantasy is not, it's not my gig, right? Brandon Sanderson's, who is a very big high fantasy, very popular author.
Yes, he is.
Lots of people feel like he is, the next George R.R. Martin of fantasy. Like it is his books that are dominating the genre. I've
Yeah, I
never
would
read his
agree.
books. I've never read them. Have you read them?
No, I remember I was doing research into him. I had like a couple on my radar when he took over for Robert Jordan's Wheel of Time. So I had him on my radar, but I never did. But he does seem to be, in all of my research, he seems to be the one that everybody points to.
Lindsay, have you ever read Brandon Sanderson?
No.
Nope. So Brandon Sanderson, who is a renowned for his epic fantasy works, has expressed support for the concept of escapism in literature and emphasized its value in allowing readers to immerse themselves in other worlds and relate to different challenges. In an interview with the Associated Press, he stated, "It's just the ability to go to another world and relate to other people's problems, problems that aren't our problems. It's a really valuable tool in our lives." Now, I disagree with his statement, but he goes on to say, "Fantasy readers, let's make room for the romanticy readers. There is space for everyone," because there has been a lot of pushback from fantasy readers on romanticy. If you check out, a review of Fourth Wing, those really low-starred cutting reviews, if you go and look what those people are, what they typically read, they typically read high fantasy. And they don't understand the romantic elements that are coming into romanticy.
I mean, I get there, I get why they're all upset about it. I don't agree with why they're upset about it, but I understand if they, they feel like it's taking over like the popularity, I guess, of fantasy, but I don't like get why it matters. I mean, like he said, there's space for everybody.
It's really interesting. Go ahead, Lindsay. What were you going to say?
Oh, I was gonna say I agree with that because like I read fantasy, and one of the things I like about romanticy that I think romanticy does really well, because like I started reading when I first started getting into romance, I Anne Bishop was my gateway drug. Like I read all of her books. I have all of her books. I love them. But like the thing is, like with a norm, and I used to read normal fan, like I call it normal fantasy, where it's like less romantic forward. There are substantial lulls in the plot. They read like an epic. A lot of them tend to read like an epic kind of tale. There's multiple iterations, so you tend to get like multiple installations of these stories with the same characters, and having that romantic element drives the lull in the plot forward. Like it gives you something else that helps drive things forward and keep you fixated on the story. Because in a and this is just me, this is just my opinion, with the like pure fantasy, there are large stretches of those stories where they're in so much graphic detail about what's happening, and then sometimes what's happening is not actually that interesting. Like,
Well,
my opinion, just mine.
some fantasy books that I have read, it feels like there's a lot of secularness within the story. Like, how many years are we going to walk in the woods before something happens? But if we're going to just walk in the woods to cover the countryside and then there's two people doing the sex all the time, that makes that walk in the woods a little less boring.
And more realistic. Anybody who's
Right.
gone long distance hiking, like if you're single on the trail, like there's a lot of that in the woods. It's gross.
I mean, I'm not saying I want to have sex in the woods. This is not what I'm saying.
No, but it's more
Yeah.
realistic to be on this journey together and to like develop a relationship. Like it's highly unrealistic. Like just think about Lord of the Rings, for example. Like, it's highly unrealistic for all of these people to be on this epic journey and no one's gonna have sex for however long they're on this
Right? Yeah.
multi-year journey.
And
Like,
you didn't
nobody's gonna
accidentally
meet
walk in
anyone
on somebody masturbating or
or
something?
love. Like, it's not
Come
realistic
on.
at all. And that is one of the things I actually do like about Sarah J. Maas, too, is that, like, whoever the character is having sex with in book one is not who they wind up with long game. And that annoys a lot of people, but I actually kind of like that element. And she's not the only one who writes in that genre and kind of does that now, but it
Yeah.
irritates a lot of like true romance fans because that's like t
Right.
very
Yeah.
taboo.
It's the love triangle. And
Yeah.
it's that happens in a lot of fantasy. And it's kind of, it happens in a lot of YA fantasy. It happens a lot. It's not my favorite, but it can be done well. But then, you know, like Stacey points out, she said, you know, that the romanticy term is, you know, there's murkiness in how it was created. So,
There
because they're kind
actually,
of,
there's not
go ahead.
murkiness in how it was created. It was created, the way that it was created was for a very specific reason.
Yeah, but I think what she's pointing out is because fantasy used, you know, it was defined as one thing. So fantasy was a complete creation of another world. Like it is, you know, you're building an entire world, you're building, it's all created. And then you had urban fantasy, which you're having, like, you're creating fantastical elements, like, within a world that already exists. So, within a world that you know, right? And then you had the paranormal, which was typically in the world you know, and it was more like just kind of like shifters or whoever, like living among people the
Actually,
way that it is,
I
right?
don't know that paranormal fits into romanticism's line.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. But I think where I'm going with that is like you kind of had clear definitions between like paranormal, like urban fantasy and high fantasy. And so
Dude.
now with the romanticy, we're kind of like taking it all and putting it into a big jar.
But we've also seen magical realism that
Yeah.
came out in the early 2000s and slowly started to come down. And actually, even before the early 2000s, because you have authors like Jude Devereaux and Joanna Lindsay and Julie Garwood that all had time travel in their books. And so when publishing made the decision, and it was with Sarah J. Maas and the success of her books, that they needed to do something because what was happening was, critically, the reviews were coming out of the publishing circles that her stuff was not fantasy enough. because it was too focused on relationships. But it wasn't romance. Like, there was this murky space that fantasy that was highly romantic relationship forward didn't have a place to land.
That makes sense.
And genre labeling is really not so much for you, the reader. Because how many of us pick up a book based on its cover and just think, okay, this looks like something I would like, especially pre social medias and Amazons. Like if we look at what we were reading pre-2010, you walk to the tables at the local bookstore or at your local Walmart and you just kind of were like, oh, I like this cover. And there are certain covers you were, drawn to versus others you weren't. Genre labeling came in for publishing to be able to hand a book to critics like the Publishers Weekly, and I can't think of any other literary magazines at this moment.
Yeah.
So that it went to the right critic to read that book.
That makes sense. But I've always been like even pre so primarily pre social media, like I would lock onto a genre like romantic suspense, or I locked onto, urban fantasy, and like I would go to that section in the bookstore, or I would go online and be like, find me books like this.
Yeah.
Like, within that genre. And so maybe, I mean, maybe that was part of the labeling as well. And I think maybe because I'm very like, I used to be very caught up in that kind of like thing, that it feels, that when they did it, I was kind of like, well, this could kind of fall into it, that could kind of fall into it. So, I mean, I get why they created it. It makes sense, especially with, the trying to differentiate from, normal or high fantasy.
It also helps in library systems that shelve based on genre.
Yeah.
And that doesn't help in as much anymore. A lot of library systems have just gone to straight alphabetizing. But, that's where this murkiness comes in between YA and
Yeah.
adult. And publishing says, okay, but we have these new adults, that are anywhere from age 18 to age 25. Where do these books fit? Well, as an educator, you're taught that children will typically read books that take place 2 to 3 years above their current grade level. So if I have a second grader, they're likely reading a book about fourth, fifth, and sixth grade children, age-wise. And so, you have YA. Well, that's young adult. So is that geared towards upper middle school? Low high school, then what are your 17, your 16, 17, 18, 19 year olds reading?
Yeah.
Well, do I really need my 15 year old reading, high adult? Do I want my 15 year old reading Game of Thrones? I guess it depends on what kind of parent you are. So there's
Mean,
that.
I was reading Flowers in the Attic, but
I
okay.
mean,
Yeah, no, I know. I know.
oh, Secret Fire by Joanna Lindsay. Like, you want Spice pre-2020? Jeez,
Yeah,
read
no,
that
I
book.
know.
But you do have authors with a history that have dabbled into magical realism, this romanticy, but they never got labeled to that pre-1990.
No,
They just.
yeah, I get it. I understand, but I think in my brain, because I had things like so specific in my brain
Yeah.
for a while, that I was kind of like, well, you can't just throw all of this in there.
Yeah. Well, and it's no different than I write genre fiction with romantic elements, right? This is a romantic fiction with fantasy elements.
No.
Another thing that bothers me about Brandon Sanderson's quote is the ability to go to another world and relate to other people's problems that aren't our problems. And I'm going to call a big fat bullshit
Yeah.
because I think more so than any other subgenre of romance. Romanticy has the most political,
It does.
the most stakes as far as, defining what's working within our own culture or subsets, the social imbalances, the controlling governments. I think that fantasy and romanticy are far more ingrained into the problems of our culture than any other subgenre.
Yep, I agree. I'm trying to wait and see if Lindsay wants to talk. I don't mean to like take over here.
I'll be quite frank. Like, I want an escapism from our current realities a lot of the times. And that's one of the things I don't like about it. Like, that's something I tend to really not enjoy. It is deeply political. It is very much a mirror of how society works and progresses. There's a lot of upheaval and rebellion, and I do enjoy those stories, but at the same time, it is a lot. There's a lot of building up that world on top of the world they're living in. So it's just like another element and depth to the world building, but it's one of the contributing factors that makes these books very, very long. A lot of these books tend to be well over 400 pages, like which is at least 100 pages, usually like at least 100 pages what you're getting in a typical romance. And that is pure world building most of the time, that extra length to the story.
So Melanie asks, would books like Laurel K. Hamilton and Kim Harrison be fantasy with romantic elements? And actually, I would say no, at least not Laurel K. Hamilton.
Yeah, no, I think she's spicier. She's a lot
She's, yeah,
spicier.
those are
Yeah.
definitely going to be. Now, both of those authors that she brings up have exceptional world building within their fantasy, which is a criticism that we're seeing of some of the popular romanticies that are hitting the market right now. Like, that was one of the big complaints with Fourth Wing, that there wasn't enough world building, not enough lore, not enough cultural expanse.
I
That's,
don't agree
oh,
with
you
that.
don't agree with that?
No, I mean, I read that book. I enjoyed that book. I think she created the world that she wanted to create. I mean, I felt like it was very, it was kind of like reminiscent of, like some like urban fantasy, without the, romance or, stuff with just like romantic elements. But she brings like all of the romance in it. Like, I felt like it was developed. I mean, I got the dragons, I got the school. It might have leaned into what people describe more as an urban fantasy, even though she had it set in another world. I feel like she probably relied on well-known things. Maybe it wasn't complete, like she didn't, it didn't feel completely like made up, like this was a whole different world. But that's another thing you run into. I mean, there are so many books out there now that have so many elements that have been done. And so, you can pull from mythology, you can pull from like things that have happened in the world or the real world and kind of make it your own. So I don't know. I thought it was, I liked it.
Okay. I have not read it. I'll be very honest. I have not read it. I've read excerpts of it, but again, like we said before, it's just really
Yeah, it's
not.
not your thing.
And there are authors, K.A. Lindy, who I like her contemporary romance. She has her Oak and Holly Cycle series that's with Red Tower that is coming out, that is her retelling of Beauty and the Beast. And I have seen reviews of that that said, the world building was exceptional. But I think that there was also a lot more takes place in settings that were already established.
Yeah, I mean, and like I said, that's the thing. Like you're getting that with typical urban fantasy. Like it's, it's like in a place, like Alona Andrews, like Kate Daniels series. Like it's set in Atlanta, but Atlanta after a magic shift happens. Like Nalini Singh's like Archangels series, the Guild Hunter series. Like it's set in New York, but it's also like the angels live among like the humans. So like I think that may be where some people are like maybe feeling like it doesn't hit like high fantasy or,
Yeah.
straight fantasy, but
It doesn't
I
need
feel
to.
like there's a lot of crossover now.
Yeah. And I don't know that it needs to. I mean, and this is something we actually talked about a little bit last night at book club. Romanticy is hot right now, right? Like market trends wise, romanticy is hot. People want to buy it. I think it is for some of that escapism. I also think that some of it is, there's a little bit something new to it, right? Even though it's not new, It's, you know, a
It's
little,
new to some people.
it's new to some people, yes. But we know of authors that have written romanticy books, Sawyer Bennett, previous to K.A. Lindy's Oak and Holly series. She actually wrote a series that, like, House of Dragons is the first book in that series. And I bring this up because there are a lot of authors that are like, all of a sudden you're hearing them say, I've always wanted to write a fantasy romance. No, I think you see the money and the pure rabidness that this reader base has, and you just want to make money. I don't know that that's the story of your heart. And I actually believe that in the criticism of, like, Devney Perry. Okay? Like, nothing in her books lends me to believe that she has wanted to write a high romantic fantasy.
Yeah, I
And
mean,
she just got a big deal for one. Like, I just.
I mean, I guess you could, yeah, I mean, I don't know that these are always the story of your heart. I mean, I think they are in some cases. But you know, like Stacy says that, you know, she thinks that Fourth Wing came out like after the definition was already done. So it came out after. So was it, you think it was like the new definition was from ACOTAR, basically, right? Yeah.
Yeah, ACOTAR. And then you had Jennifer Armentrout, who has been writing her series since 2016 or 17, I think.
Yeah, and I just started reading those this year. I'm obsessed.
So you've got Jen, who's been writing it forever. You have, but she also was writing contemporary stuff. And there are lots of authors that are playing around within, like, genre fantasy, because now Talia Hibbert has a YA fantasy that she's writing.
Oh, that's right. I forgot you said that.
There's just a lot of them, but then you have authors like Corina Halley, who she has some epic romanticies, but I think she's been publishing those since 2018, 2017. But then she also has her royals in her contemporary.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, she has a big mix, and she's had a big mix for a long
Yeah.
time.
What were we gonna say, Linz?
Oh, I was gonna say one of the things I find really interesting about Juliet Cross is like she started writing fantasy romance and then she pivoted to like rom-coms with her Stay as Fall series and her contemporary romances. She wrote, I think, four contemporary romances, and I think that contemporary romance is what really got her a lot of attention. And then, like, in parallel to this happening, romanticy took off, and she was able to like pivot back to that. And I thought that was kind of interesting, like how she was able to like really cast a wider net with her fan base with contemporary, and then kind of like cross back over into just focusing on romanticity.
Yeah. Well, and you have authors like Lucy Smoke, who she's got a deal coming out with St. Martin's Press at the end of 2025 that is going to be a romanticy. It's a trilogy. Now, she writes a dark bully romance, but also there is some magical realism as far as like Greek gods playing into her stories. So I think for her writing, it's a natural evolution to write a romanticy.
Yeah, that makes sense. Like when you have a contemporary author that's had some hints
Yeah.
of things like that in their regular work. Yeah, I
But
mean, and there are quite a few that do that. I mean, of course, you know, Nora Roberts has always
right.
done it, like since the
But
beginning of
so
time.
I would say, wouldn't you say that her Irish the Gallagher
Gallagher's of Ardmore.
Yeah,
Yeah.
wouldn't you say that's romanticy?
I don't, because a good portion of it takes place in the real world.
But there's
And
magical realism throughout the entire series. They go to
there
the Feylands.
is, but see, like, and that's the way I'm talking about it. And I think probably the way Stacy thinks about it too, is because I already have these books, like they're like categorized as magical realism for me. Like books that are like urban fantasy for me. Like I feel like everybody is kind of like pushing everything under the romanticy, but these books are like filed for me already. Like, I'm not
Yeah.
gonna call them romantasy.
That's one of the things that I struggle with a lot too. Like, I really like urban fantasy romances. That's where I really love reading those because there's less world building. They're less long because they're just creating a fictional world, oftentimes in the modern world that we're familiar with today. So it allows for like a much more readable book for me. I have a problem with really long books, if you can't tell.
No,
We
that's
listened to
fair.
one episode, Lindsay. We all know.
We all know this. Like, it's very rare I'll read a 600-page book. Like, very rare. It's very hard, which means like a lot of this is something like even if the plot sounds really interesting, I just won't pick it up. And that means like for me, almost all of my interest in this genre is urban fantasy. But I'm with Amanda. Like, for me, that stuff is already categorized because this is what got me into romance. Like, I started reading like Mercy Thompson and Shanna Abe and Gina Showalter and like Anne Bishop and like all these authors. Like, they were at my library. They were, you already know about that.
We do.
They were available to me and they pulled me into this world. But then, like with Sarah J. Maas, we start getting these like intensely long epics. And that's when I really struggled because, like, it's not like the books are coming out fast. Like, you're sometimes waiting like 3 years for the next book in the series. And that's where I struggle. That's where I start to really struggle because if I'm going to read a 600 page book, I want to know what happens next.
So I
But
have
like
to.
all I say is like I think of like like a lot of the dragons now are getting categorized under fantasy, and for me, like I've always kind of thought of that as paranormal, and so like I'm always confused about like where things fit under the umbrella of romanticy because it's like I feel like we're just throwing everything into a soup pot, and it's like the kitchen leftovers, like whatever we want to be in here, we'll go in here, and like sometimes I'm like, that's not a soup category item.
Okay, so I have two things. One, would you feel more comfortable if publishing said, okay, we're going to call things romanticy as a large umbrella, and under it, we will start to see things like cozy monster romances, urban fantasy, or urban romanticy,
Romanticy.
paranormal will fall under all of these, like if what if romanticy becomes the larger umbrella with all of the like monster romances and all that kind of stuff falling underneath it. Would that help you? Like, even magical realism could fall into it. Would that make a better feel to the term romanticy for you?
Yeah, it would. And it would give it like much clearer definition, I think, for what fits under that umbrella. And I think it would actually make a lot more books more marketable.
What
And I
about
think
for
like
you, Amanda?
too,
Oh, go ahead, Lindsay, finish.
I'm sorry. I was gonna say, like, I think too, like one of the things that irritates me is like there's that other subgenre of dark academia that everybody really loved for a long time, and like it seems
Yeah.
to have died off recently. But like there's a very clear split in that where like some of it is just like basically new adult, and then some of it is very clearly like fantasy. And I think like having it like as an overall genre with like better subgenres underneath would make it more, I guess, like clear.
So, what if I give you a list of authors and you tell me whether or not you would class them as a romantasy author? Okay. Okay. So,
Okay.
Sarah J. Maas, definitely romantasy. Okay. Rebecca Yarros, her Fourth Wing, definitely falls into romantasy. Diana Gabaldon, who wrote Outlander.
Yeah, I think that falls under romanticy for me because I don't think that was, you could kind of go time travel, you could kind of go, if you wanted to like break that off into just time travel romance, you could. But I didn't read a ton of time travel romance, so that one falling under that genre doesn't bother me.
Okay. Cassandra Clare.
No.
I would think that's more urban fantasy. What I've read of her, I would say it's more urban fantasy.
Because it's
But
set
you talk
in, yeah.
about Neely Singh and her angels living amongst you in New York City, and that you feel that's romanticy. Cassandra,
No,
oh,
that's
you
it's
don't,
urban
you
fantasy.
think it's urban fantasy.
It
And the
is
romance isn't prevalent and heavy.
It is, well, in that one, yeah, I mean, it is. I would say urban romanticy, I guess. Urban.
So romanticy.
Yeah, but I mean, I need the urban.
You need the word urban in there? It's that
I do,
important?
because fantasy to me is a completely made up world. Like, it's not
Yeah.
set in New York. I think that's my hang up, is the setting.
Okay, Deborah Harkness.
I agree with that.
Deborah Harkness.
That's a time travel. Like, it's a time travel paranormal. Like, I mean, I could see it falling under romanticism, but it's in real times.
Kimberly Lemming.
Only read the one book, so probably, I mean, that's like cozy
Okay. Well, yes, and we're
romanticism.
going to define cozy here in just a second. V.E. Schwab.
I have not read that
Okay.
author.
Lee Bardugo, who wrote the what is that one?
Oh,
The
I've
Shadow
read
and
both.
Bones.
I would classify that as fantasy
You would cl
or
fantasy and
romanticy.
not romanticy?
It would be, well, it's very romance light, I would
There
say.
are no
Yeah.
right or wrong answers here. I'm
I think,
just.
like, I don't, there's a romantic element to them, but it's overall, like, in the whole trilogy, there's a romance that was just a really big missed opportunity for her. That was a really big missed opportunity for her because she really should have leaned in. It's same issue I had with Star Wars, the new one where Rey and Kylo Ren should have been together. Like, she should have done the same thing. Like, she was a much better suited fit with the Darkling. I didn't watch the Netflix. I did read these books and I really did like them, but they're not romance. Like, the
Yeah,
romance
no.
they're just not, they're not, not, and either of them.
Okay, so we talked about Kimberly Lemming, and Melanie is asking in the chat about what about legends and lattes, cozy romanticy. And I would say legends and lattes is more cozy fantasy because I don't think the romantic elements are forward in that book.
Didn't
But
read that one, so I don't
yeah,
know.
and like, so the series I was just reading, the JL Vampa, I was like, I don't even know if this is a romance because I'm like 90% in and they haven't even had sex. There's only like one very, like, it's, I would classify that as like on the fence. Like, you can go either way with it, but it's not spicy at all. Like, there is definitely a romantic and relationship building element, but I think too, like, we get into the weeds here of like how much sex is in these books. Is it really spicy? Like, can you call it a romanticy if there is a romantic element and a happily ever after, but there's like no spice? It's just closed door at that point. And then I feel like it's more just a fantasy book to me.
Okay, so according to the Author Guild, these books must have fantasy hallmarks, such as magic systems, mythology, high stakes, and abundant world building. But the love story, the relationship, must be central to the narrative. Okay, but let's talk about cozy fantasy because that is actually also, cozy fantasy is actually newer than the term romanticy.
Yeah, and I think that's easier to fall under there because it's not an established thing that I have in my brain.
So you can accept cozy fantasy
Yep, sure
more
can.
easily than romanticy.
I know, I can't, I'm it's just how it works in here. I
I
don't know.
just, I love that. I love that about you. I love it. And to be honest, there is no right answer in any of this. Like, if I can tell you that I think this book is romanticy, my answer, I am not the authority.
Yeah, and I think you're right though, as we move forward with this being like a more prevalent term and we get, defined genre definitions underneath it, I think it's going to be easier for a lot of people, like maybe me and Lindsay, who are, our one true love is urban fantasy.
So those Tessa Hale books that I made you read, are they romanticy or are they just urban romantic fantasy?
And see, like, they're urban slash like academia, because They're, well, some of them, well, I think all of them, they're set in a school, but they're set in like a real place, like somewhere that almost like a, you know, like a Twilight, like it's set in like the Pacific Northwest. Like you could go to this place and then, you know, but the dragons are living among the humans and the humans don't know about the dragons. So it's like, you know, there's no real world building. Like it's just set in a town in the Pacific Northwest and there happens to be dragons that live there. Like there's no, I mean, there might be, you know, there's some magical systems, I guess, with how the how their shifter worlds exist, but there's no real world building.
No. Okay, so cozy fantasy. It introduces a lighter, more character-driven approach to the fantasy genre. It focuses on warmth, comfort, and personal growth rather than epic stakes or intense conflict. Here's how it fits into the landscape of high fantasy and romanticism. Cozy fantasy complements high fantasy and romanticism by offering a soft, escapist middle ground, less focused on sweeping epic quest or fiery romances, and more about the gentle magic of everyday life and connections. Now, if you would like to have a more in-depth information about cozy fantasy, you can check out bookcaseandcoffee.com, where I just wrote an article today about cozy fantasy. And I think Stacy says that's fantasy that's here for the vibes. That is 100% cozy fantasy. It is here for the vibes.
I don't think I'd like these, not one bit, because I think like what I like about the books that would fall under this genre is the stakes. And it's a, like I can't even imagine, like I've not read a single one that I would classify as a cozy fantasy. Have you read one, Amanda?
I think that Kimberly Lemming falls underneath that, the time I got drunk and saved a demon.
Molly and the
And I think
Minotaur
that's
from
probably,
Bee
oh
Gallow.
yes.
Molly and the
Yeah, I
Minotaur
mean
do.
hers is almost cozy paranormal for me. But I mean, no, I guess it's not. It's not. It's
Minotaurs are
cozy fantasy. It is.
fantastical. All of those orc books by Honey Phillips, those would fall under that. January Bell, the Fae books that she has. They would fall under kind of a cozy romanticy. And Melanie asks, can cozy be spicy? Cozy, spicy, paranormal. Is paranormacy a thing? No, and we are not making it one.
But I think the cozy paranormal exists though. Like you 100%.
100% cozy paranormal. Think about Vera Valentine's dinosaur shifter.
Can we classify Cleo Evans, her Monster Pucker book? Because like that would be helpful here. Like, where does that fit in all of that?
So
That's
those are
cozy.
cozy. Those are considered cozy monster romances, but I think they fall into the label of romanticy.
Yeah,
I
and see,
think
I think that's how I have to reframe it.
if
I
we
have
look at
to,
romanticy as the big
yeah.
umbrella with all these other things coming and tiered underneath it, cozy monster romances are romanticy because we have these magical, mythical creatures that are not contemporary. And so they belong into the fantasy world. Because if you read a high fantasy that involved variety of monsters coming together and, you know, on a quest, you wouldn't think twice about calling that a high fantasy or an epic fantasy.
Yeah, and like I said, I think the brain break for me happens with the setting. Like, and I have to be like I have to tear it underneath it for it to work for me. But I mean, I can reframe that way.
So one of the things that we have to think about, high fantasy will be extensive with rich, detailed settings, histories, complex magic systems. The world building itself often takes center stage with readers immersed in its intricacies. Like we are, you know, described down to the color of the castle. Romanticy, which will, while still rich in fantastical elements, the world building often supports the romance, the characters, and development of them rather than overshadowing them with the world. The setting and magical system are often used as a backdrop to enhance the romantic tension and conflict. So if you are thinking about your vampire books, and we don't know 100% of the lore that goes into those vampires, and it's really through the relationship that we learn that lore, then it's a romantasy umbrella versus an urban fantasy.
Vampires have always been paranormal for me, so.
I know, we've talked about this. There. I know.
Stacey and I are sharing the same brain. She's like, it's setting in creatures for me. Like, yeah,
Vampires are not, they're not paranormal.
They're if not. There's no fantastical system created around them, like if they're just out living among humans in the real world, then that's not fantasy to me.
But their right. magic and power is their magical system.
Yeah, but I mean, then you have to say shifters too, and shifters are clearly paranormal.
Shifters are paranormal, but that is an evolutionary track. It's biology. It is science. If it happens through magic, then it would fall under fantasy. If their evolution of being a shifter is part of an evolutionary system, then I will give you paranormal on those. But if it was magical, a spell, anything that's not scientific, then it's fantasy.
Well, I mean, but it depends on which author you're reading, because there are some worlds where vampires are exactly like that.
So where would you put, like, old school monster classics like Bram Stoker or Mary Shelley's Frankenstein? You know, when you look at the lore of Van Helsing, so are those fantasy to you, or they just classics? Like, you have to look at that and use that kind of as your guide going down. For example, you know, Pride and Prejudice is contemporary romance.
Yeah.
It's contemporary for its time.
I understand. It's just like, that's like the wiring of my brain. Like how it's from, you know, like whatever books I started reading. And how I got it situated there.
We're getting Stacey all worked up and in her feels.
Sorry.
What is Sookie Sackhouse? Sookie Sackhouse. I'm going to take a hit from this. That is urban fantasy. Probably urban romanticy even, because relationships were the main drive through those books. But it's definitely falls under the romanticy element. It's not just paranormal, because there are fays and there's a magical system and there's witches and.
Yeah, I would call that urban fantasy. I mean, I agree. You've got multiple creatures. Like I wouldn't say that's like straight paranormal.
Okay. Just a thought here. Like if we were to write a Christmas romance set at the North Pole with the elves and the Santa, that's romanticy because of the magic system.
Yeah, as long as there's a centralized, you know, romantic story in the front of it. Yes. So if Santa's, you know, having all the sex.
Under these rules, I'm struggling. But I don't disagree with what you're saying. I think this is like a really interesting conversation between like why people who've been reading fantasy romance a long time are confused about the sudden rebranding almost of everything under romanticy. And it's like, well, that's clearly paranormal. Like I had the same reactions you did, Amanda. I'm like, if it's a vampire or a shifter, it's paranormal. I don't care what the magic system is, it's paranormal to me. Like if it's witches, there may be like fantasy elements, but usually like with witches, I think it's more under the umbrella of paranormal.
Well, and but I think witches and Santa, I think witches and Santa are probably magical realism.
Yeah, I was going to say magical realism.
But witches and Santa.
But the books that we, that like define probably a lot of how Lindsay and I think about it, it's the majority of those three creatures. So you get the shifters, the witches, and, you know, the vampires, and they're a lot of times like intertwined in these like series and all these books that we've read. So I think that's probably part of it too. And that's really why I wanted to like have this, like I wanted to do this episode because I think it's hard for a lot of us.
Well, and that is something I'm sitting here thinking. We've never defined paranormal and what is paranormal, what are expectations of paranormal. So I'm, after the first of the year, probably going to have to do a defining paranormal episode so that, I can get Stacey to like me again. Because apparently my challenges are getting her all hot in the face.
It's not you. It's just like how we're all struggling with this, I think.
Yeah, go ahead, Lynn.
I think it's interesting to have these conversations because they're very real and true to like what's going on with romance right now. And it's really hard because romanticism in particular has been picked up by a lot of trad publishers lately, and it is being pushed very aggressively under that romanticism umbrella. And this is something I blame BookTok for because I don't think anybody called it this garbage before. Like, and yes, I said that.
The term
I don't
romanticy,
Anybody
the
did this
term
before
romanticy was
TikTok?
in the Authors Guild in 1990. Book talk was not even a dream. It came out because they did not know how to define Sarah J. Maas. So you can blame Sarah J. Maas.
Well, that's not a problem. We can blame her for a lot of things. I blame her regularly for my gray hair. Like, I don't like her because I literally went gray before the next book in her series came out. And I was like, nobody needs this shit from an author. Sorry for using. Anyway, that's why I also like indie because like indie romances, I feel like romanticy or like romanticy type books work a lot better for me under the indie umbrella because they come out a lot quicker. Like they write a book, they edit it, it comes out. You don't have to wait 3 years. I really am stuck on that. I will never be over that.
Yeah, I mean, especially when they leave you hanging.
Yeah.
But
Well, and I don't disagree. Stacey says, I think Lindsay's correct in the friction coming from new loud readers telling older fantasy readers what's already been classified for years. And yes, I mean, we all feel this every day. Before we started this episode, I was screaming about stupid people on Threads and TikTok today talking about spice and that it's only been a thing since 2020. Don't freaking get me started on those people. And I do think that's some of it. But I also have to agree with what Sue said. If it gets people reading more, let's celebrate it. I mean, if you are a huge fantasy reader, how excited are you that there are like 17 big releases coming in 2025 of these epic romanticy books by authors that have never written this before? So this is new. New stuff that we're kind of new ground.
Yeah, I mean, it even forced me to go seek out like authors that, for what I define as romanticy, were writing more of those true romanticy books and like find new authors to me because I wasn't reading Jennifer Armentrout before this year.
Right.
So that made me deep dive. Like I found LJ Andrews that way, and she is now like one of my favorite authors. I mean, it's forcing me to read outside of what I typically read for fantasy, which was urban fantasy.
See, and it's no different for someone like me because pre-2010, I was reading 99% historical romances and I was not reading contemporary. 50 Shades of Grey came out. We're not going to even talk about it. We know how we feel about all of it. But it forced me to go looking for authors that were similar because I liked the spice. I liked the angst. And I got Maya Banks. I got Rena Morgan. I got Stacey Kennedy. I got Lexi Blake and Shayla Black. And I think of those contemporary books that I just can't get enough of. I mean, the Perfect Gentleman series by Shayla and Lexi lives rent-free in my brain every day. Like, I think about some part of that series. And I wouldn't have found those without the terribleness of 50 Shades of Grey and it blowing up.
The other thing about it is the door blows wide open with books like that for really talented art authors to start writing something they never would have considered writing before. Like with Max Walker, I really love his Magic
Oh,
and
yeah.
Marvel series. Like I was really excited. Like he wrote that in response to this, and it's urban fantasy. I love urban fantasy.
It's romanticy.
But yeah, but
It's
like it
dragons.
opens the door for all these other authors. So like we get this trickle down effect where it's like, well, this has actually gotten really popular. I could write this story. Like, and then it opens this door for like all these people to just introduce you to the imaginary world that lives in their head. And we do get a lot of like, and I say that because like thinking back to like Twilight and the 50 Shades of Grey, there was so much fan fiction turned indie romance author from that. And I
Yeah.
feel like that's one
Hundreds.
thing I'll never complain about when these series go viral because they reach to other people and then other people are like, oh, maybe I could do this. And then we wind up getting really good new authors. And I'm never going to complain about more books to read.
And that's just it. And one of the things that we've kind of already discussed is part of bringing up the romanticy title was in an effort to curb expectations when it comes to reviewing. And Stacey brings it up in the chat is that a lot of people who are maybe coming from the fantasy world reading these romanticies, trashing them, or people coming from the romantic side coming into the fantasies and trashing them because they don't understand the complexity of the story, the complexity of the genre. And I agree that's frustrating. It is just as frustrating, though, when you read contemporary romance and people are like, oh, it's not, as spicy as it was in 2020. I don't know where you're reading books because I read Sylvia Day and that Crossfire series, that was not no spice.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the kind of the feeling too. I think it's if I look at it that this is a new thing or this is something that's different than my tried and true classics, like don't come for what I already have.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? I think that's where some of it comes for me because urban fantasy and paranormal are like, they're a hallmark of who I am as a reader.
So if the topic of romanticy, we're going to get some book recs from Amanda here real quick, but before we go into that, if the topic of romanticy versus high fantasy is of interest to you, I am working on a new blog post that will go up this week. So just make sure you check out bookcaseandcoffee.com or buzzingaboutromance.com, and I will be doing some edumacation over there on the website in this genre because I think this is not a genre I am comfortable in. Like, I don't read it. I'm going to be very, very honest. I don't read it because I don't get it. Just be really honest. I don't get it. Like, you have to tell me I have to go, like, I have to walk like 7,000 miles to a castle to defeat a dragon. Shrek and Donkey did it in less than 90 minutes. Why do I need 700 pages?
Yeah,
I'm just saying. Also, if anybody asks, Shrek is romanticy. In case we were
I hear
curious,
that.
Shrek is romanticy. And if you
Yeah.
want to know more about my love of Shrek, you're going to want to tune in to next week's episode with Lindsay and I.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited.
Okay,
That's
Amanda,
right.
fill up our TBR.
Okay, I'll go through these pretty quick. I've, like I said, I haven't read a ton of like what I think of as direct romanticy. So like The Everseas by LJ Andrews, The Broken Kingdom by LJ Andrews, it kind of mix a little bit of pirates, Vikings. It's all completely like built worlds. I mean, they're all made up worlds. And I have the Blood and Ash and the Flesh and Fire series by Jennifer L. Amrentrout. I just started those this year. They're really good. I'm liking them so far. They are much longer. So it's taking me longer to get through those. I feel LJ Andrews does a really good job of condensing her worlds. If you were looking for something that's a little shorter, fantasy, romanticy, whatever you want to call it, I do highly recommend her. For YA, I have An Ember in the Ashes by Saba Tahir. That is one of my favorite series ever. I do classify it as romanticy because their relationship is very important. Like the books don't happen, like the plot doesn't happen without these two getting together. The Kingdom of Crows by Olivia Wildenstein, similar kind of situation. It's a little, it leans a little more YA new adult. And then the other YA one is Children of Blood and Bone by Tomi Adeyemi. That book is, it's amazing. It's just like the world that she builds, and I haven't finished it. I have to finish. I think the last one just came out last year or this year, but that's an amazing like YA series. And then I have like a TBR of things that I'll let Becky put on the website. I'm not going to talk about them because I don't know how they are yet.
They'll be on
So,
our on-the-shelf show notes. I have a list of all Amanda's. Lindsay, is there anything romanticy that you have read recently that you think people should pick up? Or is there something that's nigging at your brain that we have to talk about before we go on to our next segment?
I'll just recommend a couple of my favorite series. Like Juliet Cross's Veil of Stars series is a romanticy series. It's a dragon series in a world that's not this one. I really like that one. Like she deals a lot in her stories about like generating equality and like it fits the parameters of like a lot of what they're fighting for in this world are very similar to like things that are happening in modern society. So I really enjoyed that one. I really like Max Walker's, like the world he painted in Magic and Marvels. It's in LA. I really enjoyed that. Like there's just so many like clever little things he did in this. It's like it's not a post-apocalyptic US, but it's like the world has formed a paranormal crack that like split in the middle of the US, and now all of a sudden like these magical creatures have come out to live. So it's like it's almost like futuristic the way it's told. It is futuristic the way it's told, like a futuristic US. So it had like a little bit of dystopian in there, and I really enjoyed that a lot. Those are the two I've read lately that I like a lot. I will say I do tend to struggle sometimes with some of the thematic elements. Like if I'm going to struggle with a book, it's more likely going to be a romanticy type book. So like when I do recommend them, they're ones that I really, really love. Like own them on my shelf kind of love.
That's fair. Okay. So that is that for romanticy. I am sure that we will be diving back into either this topic or topics that are parallel to it in the coming months, because as we get into 2025, one of the things that we're really working on is going back pre-2020 and looking at books, looking at backlists, looking at the books that made us fall in love with the romance genre. We're also going to define the romance genre a little bit and talk about it through the last 30 some decade or the last 30 years, so the last 3.5 decades, which makes me feel really old because I've been reading romance since 1991, which means 3.5 decades of romance knowledge.
Gonna be fun. I'm
It's gonna be
excited about
so
that
fun.
one.
So we have a lot coming up. We're also going to start talking to authors that are specific to certain genres. So stick around, stay tuned. It's going to be a lot of fun, I promise. We are into week 5, I believe, of Project Backlist.
Yeah, I think it's 5 or 6. Yeah.
5 or 6. I think this is week 5. I don't know. I could be wrong. This might be week 6. Project Backlist, which this is a community favorite. And actually, one of the authors, because this author is what brought Amanda to us.
It is.
So this week's Project Backlist author is author Susan Stoker. We are talking about her series, The Refuge, which is currently an ongoing series. The last book in the series comes out in January, I believe.
Okay. So January, okay.
But she wanted to give people the opportunity to go back and to read this and prep for this final book, because apparently this is a series that people are in love with and slightly obsessed with.
It's a really good series.
So fun fact about Susan. Susan, she says, "My current reading obsession is alien romance. I love how the male is all in, usually finding the heroine to be his true mate. his one and only, and the heroine is like, slow your roll, dude. I've been kidnapped, and don't know where I am, and I'm freaking out. I can't deal with a mate right now. And the male spends the book protecting her from strange alien creatures or other bad aliens, all while wooing her. It's got everything I love in the romantic suspense books I write. And Susan's Q&A is available on our website right now, and it is so funny when she talks about kidnapping in the second half. So if you love Susan and her humor, you should absolutely go read her interview over on the website, because it's a hoot. And so the book one in the series is called Deserving Alaska. And Susan Stoker, for those who don't know, Susan writes romantic suspense. It is probably a little military forward, but more on the side of veteran security forces.
Yeah, this one is all, they're all former military in this one. And it's like a place where they're kind of going for PTSD. They have like therapists and like animal therapy, and it's like a ranch situation.
Okay. So Deserving Alaska is a military romance, romantic suspense, friends to lovers, and their childhood friends, actually. Yes. So Alaska and Drake have been inseparable since middle school. After Drake suffers a combat injury, Alaska stands by him during his recovery. 4 years later, Alaska finds herself in trouble and turns to the one person she trusts, Drake. So I read this. I have not read all of Susan's books. I am not as prolific in the reading of Susan as everybody else is. This book delivers another compelling romance filled with suspense, tension, and spice. True to her style, the Athel hero is tough but tender for the woman who owns his heart. Like, he is the microtrope of everyone but her. And, you know, like, he hates everyone but her. It's just really, it's very well done. This series opener introduces a unique setting, a retreat for PTSD recovery, added depth and realism to the story. Alaska's resilience and Drake's success story create an engaging narrative, and their connection is undeniable from the start. It's the perfect blend of romance and suspense. I will say I downloaded book two from the library for the audio. So book
two is one of my favorites.
So cannot recommend this series enough. And it's quick. Like, it reads really quick.
Yeah, all of Susan's books read pretty quick.
So. She generally has really good audio, and a lot of her audio is available in Hoopla. So they're very accessible reads as well.
Yes, for sure. And she's moving things in and out of Kindle Unlimited. So if you're Kindle Unlimited, this series is not in Kindle Unlimited, but if you're a Kindle Unlimited user, she does have some series over in there to check out. So book two is your favorite in this series?
So far, I'm not finished. I have to catch up. I'm behind. Okay. So I need to catch up soon.
Okay. Well, I'm checking out book two next. So I'll let you know.
I like that one a lot.
I've been writing two series. I think she's been writing two different series in parallel. So I think I'm caught up in her other series, thanks to Leah. But I don't think I've started this one.
Oh, it's really good.
I can't remember. It's been a long time.
Stacey, I will agree. Susan has a large backlist. It's kind of like a Carrie Ann Ryan, this very large backlist, and you're not sure where to start. Honestly, we read one of her books for book club a couple months ago. It was perfect because that's a four book series. But I'm going to tell you, I think that this, the Refuge series is a total of seven books.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, you can start there without having read her other books. Like, I mean, there are some tie-ins with other series, but it's not, you don't have to read anything else.
The other thing I like about Susan Stoker's books are you can pick up anywhere. I know it drives people crazy.
No, you really can. I jumped around. There's pick a few up. Series of hers. I jumped around.
Yeah. Because, like, I read her Montlake, the one that's the towing company one, the Silverstone.
Oh, the Silverstone Towing.
Yeah, I read that one, but I picked up randomly through, but I started like at the third book and then went back. So don't let a large backlist stop you, or the fact that she releases a book every month.
Yeah.
Just if you're in the mood for a little bit of a mystery, a little bit of suspense, kind of that, you know, criminal of the week vibe, check out Susan. Or if you're like, oh, I'm going to binge watch Criminal Minds, don't binge watch Criminal Minds. Read Susan Stoker.
And I'd say about all of us can kind of tell you, like, have if you have any questions,
Yeah.
like DM any of us,
Well, not
really.
me, but
And not Becky,
the
but the
other
rest of us.
peoples. The other peoples,
She's really
yes.
good at unhinged. Like, she always has like a new kind of take on something fairly unhinged. And I'm just like, should we be concerned about you that you're coming up with this? Like,
She's a
sometimes
hoot and
I'm
a
just
half.
like, what is going through your head? But
She's
I'm
my
at the same time, I'm
Pokemon
just
Go
like,
bestie. She
yeah,
and I
I'm
play
always like, this
Pokemon to
is
go
like my
together.
true crime. Like, I don't re listen to true crime podcasts. I just read Susan
Susan Stoker.
Stoker.
That makes so much sense. I don't know if we should be concerned about Susan. I don't know.
She's so lovely.
She is lovely. She's a lovely
I live
human.
my best life at Knockout.
We
I want it
know.
every day.
Okay, so guess what time it is, you guys?
That time.
It's that time for Book of the
Week.
Week. Book of the Week time. Lindsay, what do you got?
I did a reread of one of my favorite books. I did Dirty Secret by Miralyn Kelly. It's the first one in her entire Slayers hockey series. This is one of my favorite books. It is brother's rival, childhood crush. So she has had, and it's also kind of like a hidden identity situation because she's lied to him in their one night stand that happens off the
So
page
much
before the book goes
miscommunication.
live. She's lied to him about who she is because she knows who he is and he does not know that she is his brother. He moves to Chicago, joins her brother's team, and they just start seeing each other all over the place because she's really close with the team and they fall in love and it's complicated and like they're trying not to be serious and it's just so good.
And they're messy.
It's such a
They
good
are
one.
so messy. They are so messy. And
Messy.
like, but the thing is, like, I like the way she hit, like, one of the things is, like, obviously in these like brothers anything kind of books, like things come to a head. And when things come to a head, I like that. She doesn't just let the conflict happen. She's like, I'm mad at you because you're being a jerk. It's so good.
It is. It's really
Yeah.
good. Amanda,
And it's
what's
short.
and it's short. It is short. Marilyn writes probably right around 270. So it's a really good length, especially for Lindsay. Amanda, what's your book of the week?
Okay, so I'm still down my LJ Andrews like rabbit hole. So I found out yesterday that, she has these two kind of epic more romanticy series, but I found out that previously, like back in like 2015, they were republished in 2019, she wrote like a dragon urban fantasy series. So it's four books. It follows the same couple, but I just finished book one literally like right before we started recording. It's a dragon princess. Jade is her name, and they have been hiding from humans and mages. And then she meets Tegan at a summer school for like people who think they have defective magic. And turns out he's something else entirely. And I'm really liking it so far. But it is set in like the real world, but it's like dragons, mages, and they call them wyverns in this one. But I'm really liking it so far. So, and they're really short. It's like two, I think it was like 248 pages or something.
What's the title of book one?
Oh, I'm sorry. Ward of Wyvern by L.J. Andrews. I'm sorry.
I'm just laughing because you like, there's a princess dragon, and we don't
Yeah,
know.
sorry. Yeah, I
So
didn't
I'm
finish
like,
reading what it was called.
is the
The
name of the
series is
book
called
called
The Dragon
Princess
Mage.
Dragon?
The Dragon Mage is the series. It's like a four-book saga, and it's Ward of Wyvern. Sorry. Yeah.
Okay. My book of the week is No Harm, No Foul by Hannah Cohen. I think Hannah is probably one of my favorite authors that I found in 2024, and we talked about it last week on the podcast. This is a cute, fun, Christmassy read. It is age gap, ex-boyfriend's dad romance. And for Hannah, it is spicy and it's a little naughty. Like, some people are not on Santa's good list, they're on the naughty list. But it was really good. It was really fun. It was quick. It was easy. And I really did enjoy that. So I'm trying to sprinkle in Christmas with all of my other stuff that I have to.
You're doing really good this year.
I'm trying. Patreon update. We are celebrating Hive anniversaries in December. Celebrating. So I think all four of these people are celebrating 4 years in the Buzzing About Romance Hive. Christina L, Kelly K, Carolina, and Lindsay. Lindsay, it's been 4 years.
It's not been long enough.
It has not been long. You know, it's funny that you say that because I said to Mike, I said, "Oh, you know, we should have a holiday party." And then I started thinking, I'm like, all my friends live really far away that I would want to invite to a holiday party.
Stupid amount of far.
I'm like, oh, okay. Well, I'll just drink with them on Zoom. It'll be fine. Patreon swag packs are sponsored in December by authors Delta James and Mary Carr. Remember, you will not get a package in December. You will get a double package of December and January together in January. I have an explanation of that over on our Patreon page. Make sure you join us back here Wednesday for our discussion of Wildfire by Shel Bliss. I actually list have started listening to this, and the audio is great. They're meet cute in the book. Anyway, it's gonna be messy, guys. It's gonna be a messy one. Next Sunday, we bring you a very special episode, but I can't tell you what it's about. But it's Lindsay and I, maybe some cake. And for a list of books we talked about this weekend, please visit our on-the-shelf show notes at buzzingaboutromance.com. You can find a current list of books for our upcoming Wednesday episodes on our website. Don't forget to follow us on social media for updates and join our community of romance enthusiasts. I'm actually going to release January's list of books next week. I wasn't going to release them all at once, but I am this time because there's a couple of traditional published books in January that we're doing for our Wednesday episodes, and I want people to be able to get their library holds.
Libraries.
So I will share that this week. If you love this episode, please leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. Share it with your friends, and your support helps us bring more exciting content to you every week. I hope we did romanticy and defining it justice. I hope it cleared some things up. And did it make Amanda and Stacy too mad?
No, I wanted to have this, so thank you for doing it because I wanted to talk about it, so.
Of course, anytime. I'm happy to talk about all the things. Thank you everybody for joining us. Until next time, everyone, happy reading.
Find us on Instagram at Buzzing About Romance or on Twitter at Buzzing Romance. If you like the podcast, please leave a review. If you'd like to support us directly, join the Bookcase and Coffee Patreon and receive exclusive content only available to Patreon members. Check out bookcaseandcoffee.com for our on-the-shelf show notes.